Having been a child in the era of polio and a sailor in foreign ports and a stranger in many strange lands, I have received many vaccinations. That I am well, as are so many others, leads us to ask, why should we fear vaccinating our children?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, folks, back in 1952, a polio epidemic swept the United States, afflicting over 58,000 people that year alone, killing thousands and subjecting many more to living their lives in an iron lung. In 1953, Dr. Jonas Salk announced that he had successfully tested a vaccine against polio. I was one of the many boomer children who was given his vaccine, and I did not contract polio. Later, I was a sailor aboard a U.S. Navy ship, and before our ship pulled into a foreign port, as it often did, medics would line us all up and shoot us up with vaccines said to protect us against whatever kind of diseases were prevalent in that port. And though we sailed in and out of many foreign ports, I did not contract any of their diseases. Later still, as a journalist traveling to many strange lands, I would ask my doctor to vaccinate me against whatever the threat those lands offered, and I did not contract any of the diseases. Given my experience with vaccines, I am somewhat favorably disposed to their use. After all, the vaccines worked for me, but others are not so favorably disposed. In fact, there are many who are downright resistant to vaccines, to the extent that California is considering passing legislation, SB 276, that would set up a government bureaucracy to force the acceptance of vaccines. And that leads us to ask today, why should we fear vaccinating our children? Who better to ask than two of our most prominent vaccine resistors? We'll start with Dr. Dina Churchill, who is a specialist in women's health up there in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Dr. Dina, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, thank you. I love that title, What's Eating What?
Well, it is kind of what's eating what when you're on the food chain. You know, we're eat or be eaten.
So, I feel like I'm on the food chain,
well,
Michael.
You are. So you're, so you are in many respects a chiropractor and an innovator of women's health. But the Nova Scotia College of Chiropractors gave you a new title, which is ungovernable. Now, why would they call you that?
I don't know where you'd like me to start in the story, but maybe I'll start from the most recent and then sort of slip backwards.
Okay.
But the most recent kind of media title was that Dr. Dina Churchill owes $100,000 to her legislative body, the Nova Scotia Chiropractic College, for posts that I did on vaccinations. So they were warnings, health warnings, posts that I'd done on my personal Facebook page and social media. So as a member of the board for 4 years, and I sat on the advertising committee, I was aware of certain policies, certain things I could and couldn't say in my professional practice. But these were my own personal views and, you know, posting public health information on my personal blog, which also landed me into a legal battle, really, with my governing body.
So I'm aware of and conversant with many chiropractors here in my home port down in California, and so many of them are terribly against vaccinations and speak up often about them. There must be something different between your governing body and their governing body, if they have any at all.
Well, back in May last year, there was a directive came from our health department. So that would be, you know, the Nova Scotia Health department to our chiropractic association. So as a self-regulating profession, we take our directive from the health department. So let me slip back. You know, I did a Bachelor of Science degree at Memorial University in Newfoundland. I did my chiropractic degree in Toronto at the Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College. And we didn't learn about vaccines because chiropractic is a drugless profession. And we believe in the body's innate wisdom to heal itself once you remove the obstacles to health. So as I graduated chiropractic college, I really didn't come out with a feeling about vaccine either way, other than understanding that, you know, the body's a powerful thing. But then I had my first child 21 years ago, and I suddenly became interested in vaccines. So I researched everything I could. You know, I had books and internet articles, and I was just so confused because public health was telling me I had to vaccinate. And, you know, intuitively, I just felt like if the body is a self-healing, self-regulating mechanism, why do we need these chemicals into my little baby? So I took all the information to my medical doctor's office, and I said, Dr. So-and-so, can you please read all this information, everything that I've gathered on the internet and all these books, because if I, you know, base my opinion based on what I've read, I can't vaccinate. I mean, there's no safety studies. There's no efficacy studies on vaccines. They're pumped with heavy metals and retroviruses and heavy metals. Like, I can't put that into my child. So please, if you could read this information, look through it, and then you can debate with me. Tell me what I've, you know, what's wrong with these studies. And she pushed the information across the desk, and she said, Dina, if I read this and I accept that, you know, vaccines are harmful, then I have to admit what I'm doing to kids every day is hurting them, and I can't go there. Now, Michael, I was really grateful for that answer because she wasn't calling me anti-vax. She wasn't calling me an irresponsible parent. She was just saying, okay, I can't go there. But she allowed me to make that decision for myself and my family. So right then, you know, I thought, there's something to this. If she can't go there, why not? You know, there's obviously some sort of a hold, which would be her license, mm-hmm. That she can't, you know, she can't really state her opinion or want to see what the other side is. So I started to, you know, keep researching. And Dominic's 21 now and Gabriel's 18, and they've never been vaccinated. But as I started to work in my practice, I would see children that would be fine neurologically on our assessment, but then when they came back, you know, 4 days later for their treatment, there would be neurological signs and symptoms. You know, their tongue poking out, their eyes not moving, you know, properly. They were talking before, now they weren't. And I thought, wow, there's something to this. Like, this is serious. So I started asking more questions, and I sent letters to the College of Physicians and Surgeons. I sent letters to the Nova Scotia Health Minister, to the Federal Health Minister, and even hand delivered to.
And the more you did that, the more ungovernable you became.
Yeah.
And I was going to get a quick thumbnail to the folks out there to what happened to you by the Nova Scotia College of Chiropractors. They ultimately forced you to surrender your chiropractic license, forced you to admit to being professionally incompetent because of a mental incapacity, and they forced you to pay $100,000. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I haven't paid that yet. Our settlement agreement was, you know, to pay it back over a period of years. But yeah, it was basically they had me suspended.
Well, that's certainly demonstrating, you know, a strong conviction in your beliefs. I'd like to introduce our other great resistor today, Laura Hayes, mother of three, a writer, and a anti-vaccine activist from Northern California. Laura, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Great presentation if anybody ever wants to see Laura speak. Weston A. Price Foundation YouTube called Vaccines, What Is There to Be Pro About? Well, Laura, you are pretty good with the fire and brimstone against vaccines, but how did you become so anti-vaccine in the first place?
I have three young adult children who are currently 23, 25, and 27, and our middle child suffered severe, catastrophic, and permanent brain injury from his, quote, routine childhood vaccinations. I didn't know at the time. I, like Dina, with our first child, who's now 27, our daughter, when I took her in for her two-month well baby appointment, the appointment was just ending, and I was starting to pack up her diaper bag, and the pediatrician said, wait, we have to give her her shots. And my maternal instinct kicked in full force, and I said, no, thank you. I don't know what you're talking about, but she doesn't need any shots, and we're not getting them. Had I only stuck with my maternal instinct, my God-given maternal instincts, our family's lives would have been so much different, because I knew that my baby didn't need any shots. I truly didn't know what she was talking about, but she took me back out to the waiting room, sat me down, and said, read this sheet of paper. It was a half sheet of paper that she typed up with three sentences proclaiming the pro-vaccine mantra that vaccines are safe and effective, even though there's zero evidence to support either claim, that vaccines have saved millions of lives, again, zero evidence to support that claim, and that my baby needed them, no evidence to support that claim. And my heart was racing. I was sweating. Every fiber of my being was telling me to leave that office, but I didn't. I'd been trained, you know, be polite, don't be rude, listen to the doctors.
Trained to obey.
And we have our maternal instincts tamped down because mine were working full force, and I should have left, but I didn't. She came back out after 15 minutes, grabbed me by the elbow, took me back into the room and said, it's time for your daughter's shots. And that was kind of the end of me. It was before the internet. I just didn't even know that there was literature out there I could have found. I'm sure it would have been difficult, but it was out there. And so our daughter was vaccinated and subsequently our two boys. But after our middle child, after every set of vaccines, he either lost previously acquired skills or developed strange, atypical, unusual behaviors. And when I would bring them up to his pediatrician, she would attack my mothering or him. She would say, when I said he has a strange smell about his breath, it's almost alcohol-like in nature. And he was 6 months old, not crawling yet, unable to open a bottle. And her, instead of bending down and smelling this breath, she said, is he getting into your alcohol supply? At 12 months, at 18 months, I brought up that I was concerned he wasn't speaking. Meanwhile, my very precocious, very verbal 3-year-old daughter is sitting next to me, and she knew I was a stay-at-home mother, and she looked at me and said, well, do you ever sit on the ground and play with him or talk with him? Again, attacking my mothering. I said, of course I do. I do it all day long. So does his father, his sister, grandparents, and he is still non-responsive. And then she gave him a little receptive language test, of which he failed 100%. He did not even realize he was being spoken to. Little things like calling his name, asking him to walk across the room. He didn't respond to one instruction. So then she looked at me and asked me if he was always this naughty. So instead of identifying that he had zero receptive language, not to mention no expressive language, she attacked him and, you know, basically implied that he was a naughty child. I said, we're actually concerned that he's too good. He doesn't talk. He doesn't misbehave. He doesn't do naughty things. But she didn't listen. They are so... Pediatricians have zero training when it comes
and
to vaccines.
And so when they don't listen, somebody has to stand up and yell at them until they listen. But when they do listen, they get really frightened. And that's when things get spooky. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. Is who are these people who are trying to shut you up so much? You post something on the internet, they fine you $100,000? This is incredible. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Dr. Dina Churchill, Laura Hayes, and you. Right back.
Now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, not everybody agrees that vaccinations are safe, and we have two folks here who do not agree on that respect. One is Dr. Dina Churchill, the other is Laura Hayes. Both are parents, both are mothers. and both are standing up against vaccines. One of the first questions I want to ask is that I always like listening to people I don't agree with, and with the hopes that I might learn something new. But there are forces that evidently don't want people like Dina or Laura standing up and talking. And one of them would be the Chiropractic College up there in Halifax, Nova Scotia, who, when they saw what Dr. Dina Churchill was posting on her social media, said, "You can't do that." And Dr. Dina, what did you tell them?
Well, you know, I was very compliant, Michael, with removing the posts from my personal page, you know, my Oxford Chiropractic page. Mm-hmm. But my personal page, I just felt like it was an infringement on my freedom of speech and against the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So I, at that point, you know, I stated that I was going to take this to the Supreme Court of Canada, that really your personal views, just like on vaccine or your religious views, if I was a Mormon and, you know, didn't believe in, you know, blood transfusions, it'd be the same thing. I mean, how can a professional body regulate your own personal voice? So for me, it wasn't at that point, not even if vaccines were safe or effective, but how can the government regulate your own personal views and beliefs? So, you know, that was kind of where I was headed.
That's exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they did. Laura, who is putting, who wants to shut you up?
Well, we have Amazon, we have Twitter, Pinterest, Google, Vimeo. That's just the government, the AAP, the AMA, the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, legislators. We have many people who want us to be censored. And it takes us back to the root of the problem. You can't have vaccine mandates in a free and ethical society. And we, as a country, have signed numerous international treaties of ethics confirming our belief in that, going back to the Nuremberg Code. And right up until 2005, the UNESCO Declaration on Bioethics. We have been a signer agreeing that the voluntary consent, the prior voluntary and fully informed consent of the individual is required prior to any medical treatment, procedure, or intervention. Yet, vaccine mandates obliterate that agreement. You cannot mandate medicine in a free and ethical society. Vaccine mandates make the ethical practice of medicine impossible. When something is no longer voluntary, there can be no informed consent. Vaccine mandates violate our United States Constitution, which guarantee parental rights to direct the care and upbringing of your child, which of course includes health care and medical decisions. The U.S. Constitution guarantees us religious freedom, and for anyone who has investigated the ingredients in vaccines, for most, it's going to violate their religion to knowingly harm, poison, potentially kill their child via vaccination.
Well, who are the obliterators? Who is behind the effort to shut you up?
Pharmaceutical companies would be first and foremost. They now control our legislators. They're the biggest donors. They're the biggest lobbyists to legislators. They control the media narrative because in non-election years, they are responsible for 70% of mainstream media's revenue. That's why when you look through any magazine...
70%?
70% in non-election years. So they're controlling the narrative, and mainstream media outlets are not going to bite the hands that feed them. They know that if they are to accurately cover the vaccine story, including that vaccines are not safe, they're not effective, they fail time and again. Safe means they don't cause harm. They harm and kill regularly and needed. They're not needed. We have many risk-free, time-proven, common-sense ways to protect, maintain, and enhance health without the use of risk-laden vaccines. But the media won't cover any of that, because then they would lose their pharmaceutical advertising dollars. So pharma now controls the media narrative, which is involved in now censoring truth. They control our legislators who are making these tyrannical, fascist vaccine mandate laws. they control the medical trade industry groups because they fund those also. So then they have the trade industry groups doing their bidding also. So they are pretty much in control of this narrative, and they are the ones that are behind the censorship of vaccine truth and trying to shut down stories on the internet, in mainstream media, at legislative hearings.
And what they've done to Dr. Dina is simply incredible. Dr. Dina, do you feel the impact of Big Pharma up in Canada with its nationalized health care system that Laura feels down here in the United States?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, these laws, as Laura said, come, you know, from higher up. So the CDC, for example, Center of Disease Control and Prevention, is a vaccine company. The World Health Organization sells vaccines. Google has now just been bought out by a vaccine company. We have a bill.
What did you say? Google?
Google is now a pharmaceutical company. It's been bought out by pharmaceuticals. So the articles that I'm researching, there's a Bill 39 that's up for legislative review, which would remove non-medical exemptions in New Brunswick, which is one of the provinces on the East Coast. And as I'm researching, you know, articles for this presentation, I can put the title in Google and I can't find the article. So
wow.
There's another.
Now, is that Canada Google, or is that different than Google in the United States?
I think it's all the same Google.
All the same.
No?
So,
yeah. But there's a browser I'd just like to mention to you, Michael, and to your viewers, and it's a new browser called DuckDuckGo, like the kids' game, DuckDuckGoose, but DuckDuckGo, G-O. And if I put those titles in there, there is still, non-biased information where you can get both sides of the vaccine.
Well, there you
story.
Go, folks, a different way of looking at the world, DuckDuckGo.
DuckGo. Yeah, it's a non-biased browser. It's the one I'd recommend.
So not only does Big Pharma controlling the media, owning the media, as it does the Los Angeles Times, for example, but it's determining what you may or may not search for in that media.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So and if you look even higher, if you look, okay, the pharmaceutical companies, who's funding the pharmaceutical companies, right? The biggest vaccine investor, Bill Gates, like $20 billion, you know, he makes from vaccines. So if
he makes it from vaccines?
Oh, it's probably more than that.
$20 billion?
$20 billion.
Okay.
So he's the biggest vaccine investor. There's a YouTube video that you still might be able to find on Google. If not, go to DuckDuckGo. And there's a YouTube video where Bill Gates talks about the purpose of vaccines in depopulating the planet. Michael, I mean, it's crazy. It's absolutely nuts for this big vaccine investor to, it's not about public health. It's about depopulating the planet. I mean, please, give me a break.
Okay, so DuckDuckGo. I'm going to DuckDuckGo for just to see what it's like. Now, let's go to vaccines. Laura made a speech at the Weston A. Price Foundation that was very impressive. It had a list of objections for discussion. So I'd like to go through them with you, both of you. And the first one she brought up was that how can vaccines be both safe and unavoidably dangerous? Laura, let's start with you.
Yes, so vaccines, we're constantly told by doctors, government regulators, and the media that they are safe. And by definition, safe means does not cause harm, and certainly it means does not cause death. Yet, in 2011, our United States Supreme Court declared vaccines unavoidably unsafe. Now, when you have syringes filled with known poisons, like formaldehyde, if you read the MSDS, the Material Safety Data Sheet, on just that one ingredient, formaldehyde, you will be horrified in the ways in which it must be handled, workers who handle formaldehyde. Yet, that's in most of the vaccines, and we're injecting it into pregnant women, newborns, infants, toddlers, right on up through the elderly. You have heavy metals that we know, mercury, for example, in the form of thimerosal, which has been banned from topical over-the-counter products, but which is injected in insanely toxic amounts into pregnant women and then infants. And if anyone tells you that the mercury is out of the vaccines, I have one statistic to share with you. In the 2015-16 flu season alone, when infants and toddlers from 6 to 35 months of age are recommended to get 4 flu vaccines, in that 1 year, 11,200,000 vaccines that were without thimerosal would have been required for the 70% coverage rate in that age group. There's only one maker of the preservative-free flu vaccine, and that is Sanofi Pasteur. That year, they made 200,000 doses. That means in the U.S., for 1 year, for children aged 6 months to 35 months, we were 11 million doses short of preservative-free vaccines.
So somebody was fudging the numbers for us, it sounds like.
Right. So when you're told that they are mercury-free, and then there are some that are labeled thimerosal-free, well, that label can mean 1 microgram or less of mercury. 1 microgram of mercury is 1,000 times greater than that which is permitted in drinking water. And it's being injected into pregnant women, newborns, infants, when their blood-brain barrier is wide open. We know it doesn't close until at least age 2. And even after that, vaccines contain polysorbate 80, which is an emulsifier, which enables ingredients in the vaccines to cross through cell walls and through the blood-brain barrier, where it will deposit those ingredients. So we have these ingredients. We have poisons. We have heavy metals. We have aluminum, which we're learning more and more about the horrible neurotoxicity of aluminum, which is in most of today's vaccines. We have known carcinogens, glyphosate, MSG, polysorbate 80, and others, formaldehyde. We have all types of ingredients that we know cause toxicity, inflammation, neurotoxicity. And these are in the vaccines that are given in multiple doses. You know, at a catch-up appointment, an infant can receive 13 different vaccines via 8 syringes, so that's 2 per limb. Number one, that's child abuse. Barbaric to hold an infant down and be jabbing them and piercing their skin deep into their muscle tissue with all these toxic ingredients that will now go into a closed system with no way to escape. But here's the kicker.
Wait a minute. Closed system with no way to escape. What do you mean?
So when you ingest something, if you ingest something toxic or poisonous, you have a prayer of getting it out. You might throw up, or it will make it through your digestive tract and might be cleared out, and you might eliminate it via your urine or your feces. Now, when something's injected, and when we know it's being helped to cross through your cell walls and through your blood-brain barrier, it's going to be deposited into your brain, into your organs, into your bones, for it to stay there. Many of these things are not eliminated. There's no way for them to be eliminated. So now they are going to stay in your child's body to wreak havoc over the course of their lifetime. It might be right away with a seizure, a high fever, a high-pitched scream. It might be down the line with speech and language delay or no language at all. It might be a few years down the line when you get a type 1 diabetes diagnosis or when you discover that your child's anaphylactically allergic to peanuts.
It'll be so far down the line that nobody will know what caused it.
No one will trace it back to the culprit. But I wanted to just say something. The real kicker, Michael, is all those categories of ingredients which I just described, known poisons, known carcinogens, known toxins, known neurotoxins, sterilizing agents, etc. If those were to be injected into another person by anyone other than a doctor, nurse, or pharmacist, that person would face criminal charges. But somehow, when someone wearing a white coat wields those syringes full of heinous ingredients made in heinous ways, it is somehow legal. But if you or I were to do that, if we were to inject someone with those, we'd go to jail, even if we were to put those ingredients in a baby's bottle and feed them to a baby. You'd go to jail.
Yeah, Dr. Dina, why are we injecting babies?
First, I just want to thank you, Michael, for having me on the show, and thank you, Laura, for sharing your story. And, you know, it's parents like you and your pain that you've gone through with your family that's really serving a purpose for the world. So, you know, I'm grateful for that.
And it's people that speak up about it, I guess. And you spoke up about it, and it cost you your chiropractic license. It cost you your credibility. It cost you $100,000. But so,
but this is,
yeah, go
this
ahead.
This is the issue. Okay, I can talk about fluoride as a neurotoxin in water. I can talk about glyphosate, which is, you know, the water soluble poison that they put in genetically modified foods. I can talk about chemtrails and heavy metals and pollution in the air. Why can't I talk about the chemicals that are being pumped into our infants and pregnant moms?
Well,
right?
Why?
It's because of this pharmaceutical influence. It's money. It's a business for them. And you mentioned about, you know, you had all the vaccines and you didn't have any problems. But you guys touched on an important thing there with latent effects. Oh, I hear music. Does that mean we're going to a break?
Wait, we'll pick it up when we get back. I'm also going to go back to my question of why are we giving babies all these shots? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're talking about vaccines. What's wrong with them? Why are we so afraid of vaccines? It seems to be the mothers of babies who are the ones who are frightened. It seems to be the makers of vaccines are not. Do stay tuned. Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are back, and we're talking with two people who are staunchly opposed to vaccines. I, you know, was not so staunchly opposed to vaccines because I've been shot up with vaccines all my life. I'm probably, my cup runneth over with vaccines ever since I was a wee tyke, and the polio epidemic swept through the nation and scared everybody pretty much to death. And we all got vaccines, and we somehow conquered that disease. But now, today, it's not just a polio vaccine. It's all kinds of vaccines we're pumping into little tiny babies. How many, Dr. Dina, are we pumping into those little tiny babies?
I think the numbers are about 72 shots by the time the child is 16 years old. I think that's the general schedule. And that's the difference, Michael, between when we were kids. You know, when, before 19...
Did you say 72?
72, yeah, shots by the time the child is 16 years old.
And this is all of the stuff that Laura was talking about, all of these heavy metal toxic waste ingredients.
There's one thing that Laura didn't mention. I loved her presentation. I agree with everything she said. But there's also something called retroviruses. And this is really just came out recently with Dr. Judy Merkovitz's work. She was a CDC researcher. And these are retroviruses that come from animal tissue, like mouse and monkey tissue, where the vaccines are grown. And these retroviruses are already causing disease in the population that you're not associating back to the vaccines.
Oh,
so 10 million chronic fatigue cases, for example, and 100 million AIDS cases came from the vaccine lab. So when you say, you know, you haven't had any problems with vaccines, you haven't had a seizure and you're not dead, but, you know, there's a lot of latent effects that happen over a period of time, cumulative.
That's not good news at all. if you see it from my perspective, all of these things,
the flu shot. Okay, my dad says I'm never getting that flu shot again. Every time I get it, you know, I get sick. And I said, Dad, in the flu shot alone, there's 250 times more mercury than what the environment allows. And these are statistics came from Robert Kennedy Jr., who's an environmental lawyer. Mm-hmm. So if you have 5 consecutive flu shots, your chances of Alzheimer's increase by 10 times. So, you know, you could be 20 years out, you could be 50 years out from when you had those vaccinations, and the effects, you know, the cancers and the neurodegenerative disorders are happening because of those cumulative toxic effects.
Okay, let me go back to my question about babies. Why are we forcing babies to get all of these vaccinations right at the beginning of their lives?
Michael, it's fear.
Money.
It's money and it's fear. You can... the fear factor is great. Parents have been taught to fear the infections. I'm not even going to call them diseases. Parents have been taught to fear the infections for which there is a vaccine. It's playing on parents' fear, and you inject the babies who are not old enough to properly defend themselves. They try. They scream. They cry. They make little fists. They scream bloody murder. And we've so tamped down our maternal instincts. If I were to pinch your baby, you'd probably smack me. Yet these doctors are piercing them in multiple limbs, hurting them, injecting poisons, and the mother sits by and either watches or participates in it. We have got to get back to common sense, but infants and toddlers are easy victims. You scare the parents, and then they actually help and participate in this barbaric practice of holding down their own children as they allow them to be injected with all types of things. And actually, I just wanted to make a quick correction. Dina, in both of my presentations, my WAPF1, which Michael referenced, vaccines, what is there to be pro about, I do talk about retroviruses, and I talk about them again in a presentation I gave last November called Why Is This Legal? And I would challenge anyone who is still vaccinating themselves or their children to watch or read both of my presentations, which can be found at ageofautism.com under the special report tab.
They could probably just search for vaccines, what is there to be pro about, but they might not be able to find it in Google, so they might have to go to DuckDuckGo.
Right, or just easy. My work is all cataloged at ageofautism.com under the special reports tab on the home page. And I challenge anyone who's still vaccinating to watch or read those two 80-minute comprehensive vaccine-related presentations. And I absolutely guarantee you that if you read or watch them in full, you would never, ever permit another vaccine to be injected into anyone you love, be it yourself, your children, your elderly parents, absolutely no one.
Laura, let me ask you this. We see what happened to Dr. Dina up there in Canada. She stood up and she spoke out on her own personal website about what she thought of vaccines. And her professional organization came after her. And essentially, my God, it took away her license. They forced her to plead to being incompetent because of a mental incapacity. They fined her $100,000. And they did that, as I understand it, through an official government-sanctioned effort. Now, we see this kind of thing happening in California with a new Senate, a proposed Senate, piece of Senate legislation here in California. Now, are you going to be in the same boat?
We are being painted as terrorists, those of us who speak out against vaccines. They're slowly working toward that, shutting all of us down and making it some type of a criminal offense. And we need more Dr. Dinas out there. We need all of those who know to be speaking up and out. Until we reach that tipping point of enough citizens resisting, refusing, and rebelling against this medical tyranny and this forced poisoning of our children and in increasing categories and ages of people, until we resist and rebel, we are not going to win this battle. And there are so few who are willing to speak out like Dina did at personal cost to themselves, and that's part of the reason we're in the predicament we are in. There are many more who know, who choose to remain silent. And we are past the point in time where we can have people who are in the know remaining silent. And it just happens at every level. We've got, you keep mentioning California's SB 276. This is initiated by Senator Richard Pan, who also happens to be a pediatrician. This man is without honor or ethics. Back in 2011, he sponsored the bill AB 2109, which forced a parent to pay for and submit to a lecture of personal opinion by a specified health care practitioner, typically a pediatrician, to basically have them sign off on their personal beliefs exemption. So it was, in effect, a medical exemption because you had to have a doctor sign off on it. during that bill, he promised all the other legislators, don't worry, parents will still have the final say. I'm not taking away parental rights. 4 years later, he introduced SB 277, where there would be no more personal belief exemption in California, which at that point included a religious exemption that Governor Brown had added during AB 2109. So now he's lying. He's lied to his legislators because now he's saying parents aren't going to have the choice. Now the only exemption left will be a medical exemption, which are near impossible to get, costly, and will usually only be granted after one of your children has either died from a vaccine or nearly died. But he promised that doctors would be given complete discretion to sign those medical exemptions. He lied again because here we are in 2019 with Senator Pan sponsoring SB 276, which is now he wants to take away the right to sign medical exemptions from doctors and give it to the state, a specified state designee, to decide whether a medical exemption for a particular child is valid or not so that they can go to daycare or school. But again, it's always let's go back to the root of the problem. Informed consent involves a formal opting in, never an opting out. Why are we even begging and pleading for these exemptions, including a medical exemption? We should not have to go to a doctor to have them sign a permission slip to get us out of a medical procedure, an invasive, not benign at all, a potentially fatal, invasive medical procedure, times 74. If a pregnant woman gets the pregnancy-related recommended vaccines, it's from gestation through 18, it's 74 vaccines. A parent should not have to ever, ever get permission to opt out of medical procedures for their children. Nothing other than a simple no thank you should always suffice when one wants to refuse or decline any medical treatment procedure or treatment for themselves or their child. We've got to get rid of the mandates. All this energy we put in fighting for the exemptions is truly a waste of time.
Is it what you're saying, in effect, that the government, local, state, national government, at the behest of pharmaceutical industry, is forcing parents to turn in their parental responsibility, give it up, and shut up?
They want the state to have control of the children, not parents. And so parents need to get savvy to this and demand a return of their individual and parental rights with regard to medical decision-making.
And if you have a lot of money, it's a lot easier to control the government than a bunch of mothers who are trying to protect their babies.
I disagree. I think mothers that are trying to protect their babies are a powerful force to be reckoned with, and this is what I'm recommending.
Too.
The Vaccine Choice Canada movement is, you know, based on mothers and fathers, parents of injured kids, and I've said, you know, you should collect enough people to have a class action suit. I mean, it's not just one parent against pharmaceutical companies, because this is what happens, right? You know, they shut you down.
Sure.
But if you have a class action suit where you get all these injured people, and this is what Robert Kennedy Jr. with the Children's Health Defense, another website I'd totally recommend, Children's Health Defense, and he's putting money into, you know, challenging these legislative bills. But, you know, mothers and parents, you know, we just have to take back our power.
Mm-hmm. It's always like that. You know, the only chance little people have is that they act together. Because when they act alone, you have no power at all. But when you combine your efforts with others, you can act very strongly.
You were talking about the bill in California. I'd just like to make a quick note about the bill that's going to, you know, that they're reviewing here in New Brunswick and also in BC. So just like they bookend, you know, the California and New York, you know, in the states, they targeted, you know, gave the measles scare epidemic, mm-hmm. you know, tried to push through. They've done the same trick. They even use the same disease, you know, illness, childhood illness, you know, causes fever, rash, lasts for 10 days. But they've somehow scared the public into thinking this would be an epidemic if you don't rush out and get the vaccine.
Didn't mothers used to have measles parties?
Yeah, measles, chicken pox, you know, I had mumps. It's a childhood illness, you know, but they've made it into, again, using fear, right? It's fear playing on mother's ignorance. But this bill was put forward not by a medical doctor, not like Senator Pam, but was put forward by the Minister of Education, Dominic Cardi. And I emailed all the safety studies show unvaccinated kids are healthier and pose no risk. I gave him the studies, and he called me, what was it, hostile. And I was very polite, but just supplying him with the data that he could make, you know, maybe withdraw his, you know, public bill that he was putting forward. So, again, it's not about public health, because the public health science is very clear vaccines are dangerous and that all these diseases, natural infections, were on a natural decline before the pharmaceutical companies even came into place. So polio actually spiked after the vaccine came in. So if we go back and we look at the data and the science, it's clear. Clearly, this is a problem that's motivated by money and it's run by our ignorance and fear.
It's their wealth over our children's health. And yes, this measles thing is just, it's laughable if people could see through the reality. Here we are declaring a few cases of a benign, week-long illness characterized by a fever, rash, possibly some diarrhea, that then gives you lifelong immunity.
Lifelong immunity.
To measles, which helps prevent against many kinds of cancer, both in childhood and adulthood. And we're trading that in for, you know, these lifelong chronic illnesses, premature death, developmental disabilities. But what is the true outbreak? A few cases of measles across 50 states every month, or 9,259 cases of severe lifelong permanent disability named autism per month in the U.S. So there's 9,259 cases of autism being diagnosed in children in the U.S. every single month. And what is that? That is not a week-long rash. That is a lifelong, devastating to the individual, independence robbing, communication stealing, devastating to the family, devastating to our schools. Our schools are being crippled under all the kids with special needs, devastating to our nation. Who is going to, you know, be capable of employment or defending our nation?
We are out of time, but we're not out of you. Thank you so much, Dr. Dina Churchill. Thank you so much, Laura Hayes. Thank you so much for standing up for those little children. Oh, my God. What a frightening, frightening thing. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Thank you all so much for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.